Welcome to the She Wore Black podcast. I'm Agatha Andrews. Today, Lindy Ryan joins me to talk about Bless Your Heart, her new bloody book full of Texas charm. We discuss whether or not this book is a slasher, the wonderful matriarchy at the heart of this book, and her nuanced character work that humanizes Texas caricatures into fully realized people. I have Bless Your Heart in my bookshop if you want to support both the podcast as well as independent bookstores nationwide. That's at bookshop.org/shop/sheworeblack. If you want another way to help out my show, you can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads, and leave me a review wherever you get your podcasts. You can also join my Patreon community, buy merch, or make a coffee donation through the links available on my website at sheworeblackpodcast.com. Thanks for joining me today. Now, on to the show. Well, Lindy Ryan, I am so excited to have you on the show. Ever since Rachel and Neil were on my Looking Forward to the Most in 2024 episode, Rachel told me and Neil about it, and we got so excited. I can't believe, as a Texan, I hadn't heard of this. Bless Your Heart. And I am so excited to talk about it today. It was such a fun read. If you can share with my listeners what the book is all about, we can dive right in because I cannot wait.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for having me. Bless Your Heart is set in Southeast Texas in 1999 and follows four generations of women who own and operate a funeral parlor as a front for helping keep the town's restless dead right where they belong in their graves. So a little bit of family fun stuff, some Southern charm, and a lot of monsters.
It was such a good time. And I had the fortune of both reading the book and having the audiobook. And you were so lucky to have the reader that you have. She was marvelous.
Stephanie's absolutely incredible. You know, when Minotaur sent me all the auditions, I heard her voice and I said, that's the one. That's the voice of this series. And working with her has been incredible. She's amazing in every possible way. And she did an incredible job on the book.
Oh my God, it was a good time. I can see myself listening to it multiple times. It was so much fun. I love the idea of a matriarchy at the center of a gruesome yet delightful book. Lindy, very good. Very good. It was fun to read those parts and go, oh, I didn't see that coming. I saw so many threads to real life when communities of women are the ones that are doing the work that ultimately keeps people safe, though. And I was really interested in that. Was this always supposed to be a monster story for you that happens to work on many levels? Or was this a way to tell a bigger metaphorical story, especially as it relates to a matriarchy, generations of women?
You know, Bless Your Heart started out as a therapy project for me. My grandmother, my Nana, had passed away, and I was dealing with kind of just working through that grief and working through that loss of, you know, my family was very much a matriarchy ran by my great grandmother, Ducey, as we always called her. So this started as a way for me to kind of mourn those women and to appreciate the impact that they've had on my life. And then as I started writing, it just became its own, you know, vehicle, its own momentum. And I found that while developing the story in the world of the Evans women, it really did move on to tell a bigger metaphorical tale about identity and about, you know, kind of embracing your inner monster and about existing in a world that will try to keep you down when you should be rising. So I think there's a lot of layers depending on what speaks to any individual readers. And I love that because, you know, I love when things kind of take on a life of their own. And that this certainly has done that with the Evans women.
Absolutely. And what I love is that the cover is so fun and inviting, and it does that work of really just being a page turner that makes you laugh, that makes you go, you know, that scares you. It does all the things, but it is, you know, and romance has this conversation a lot too, because a lot of their covers are illustrated regardless of what's inside. And I love this cover, but I do love that, I guess it was just all these wonderful surprises in there that I didn't, you know what I mean? And I like that speak to everything that you're saying, especially with regard to a matriarchy.
Yeah, the cover was a big surprise for me too, because I think, you know, coming up in the horror community and being, you know, very entrenched in like the spooky side of things, when the cover came, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so like bright and sunny. And, you know, I kind of panicked a little bit, but then I've really come to embrace the way other people see the story and to see the levity and the humor and the lightheartedness. Well, you know, I wrote the story as a grief exercise for me. So watching, you know, the marketing or whatever connect with those lighter sides has actually been kind of amazing. So yeah, the cover is great. The UK version of the cover is super fun as well. So I love seeing how different artists conceptualize in the book, as you know, so it just becomes a community. And I think the Evans women, you know, would appreciate those different approaches.
I think the pearls and the fangs are my favorite.
I know, I'm gonna have to start wearing more pearls, I think. It's my new part of my new fashion.
Oh yeah. Well, as a Texan, especially as a Texan, I loved how much nuance you gave your characters, both the good and the bad, like the, you know, flattering things, unflattering things, you know, good characters that are a little more vexing. And you nailed folks in a way that is beyond the two-dimensional cartoons that Texans are often painted as. Even if the moment was brief, we were in the heads of the sheriff, the mortician, like even ancillary characters. And things I noticed were the sheriff licking his lips, the nail polish worn by Snow, the butterscotch candies eaten by the great grandmother. And all of this was doing very specific character work. And it was all things, especially as a Texan, that I could identify. Everybody knows the sheriff licking their lips and doing that slow talk. And, you know, as an editor and a writer, can you speak to the importance of these details?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a small Southeast Texas town, very much like the ones that the Evans women live in. And I knew those people. You know, I knew the coroner who licked his lips. I knew the beautician who was working with 20-year-old styles. I knew, you know, I was one of the weird kids in school who didn't care about football and, you know, cheerleading and all the things that, you know, you're supposed to care about in small town Texas. And so when I write characters or I write their worlds, I want them to be real. Even if they are those ancillary characters or people we only see on the page a few times, they still deserve to have a, you know, to have a role in the story that they're set in. So I spend a lot of time looking for quirks or details or objects, things that a character can connect to that can make their world real and tangible. And that readers, you know, can see themselves in or see people they know in. And, you know, it builds the way that you consume information if you can connect with it in multiple points. So, I mean, I just want those characters to be real and to stand out and, you know, to exist in the world that's been created for them. So a lot of character ticks in my writing, for sure.
What I think it also does, especially when you have, as a Texan, for example, and what I was speaking of as far as Texans being cartoons, especially when you have things like a political landscape that we have right now, where, you know, there's a lot of voices that don't get heard because of the way our political system is set up to suppress those voices, what you inevitably have is dismissals of us, and people think, well, they deserve what they get and all of this. And what you have done was humanize cartoons. You know, you have shown faces and given us a human element to, you know, people that live in a state like these Evans women are really rad, you know. and as you said, you know these women. We're not a monolith, and you've humanized people.
Texas is a huge state, right? The South is a huge area, and there's lots of different people, lots of different ideas, lots of different kind of cultural influences. There's so much. It's very much not a one size fits all state or a one size fits all region. There's a lot going on in there and a lot of inner conflict between the people and the kind of Southern cultures that exist in that gumbo that we all love down in the Deep South. So yeah, you know, I wanted these characters to be real. And of course, since I was writing based on inspiration of, you know, my family or my hometown, it was you know, pretty simple or pretty easy to bring those things together to give them life because they are real. You know, my great grandmother, you could not get her away from butterscotch candies for 5 seconds. They were going in. My grandmother, my grandparents, my great grandparents, my parents, huge clock collectors. So like all the clocks were real. All the gardening was real. Like everything was so very real. And, you know, I wanted to bring that in to show, you know, the different people who interact with each other and how they interact in a very real way. So hopefully I did well with that.
What's wild too, that people don't even realize about this state, and I've talked about this on the show with other Texas writers, is our landscape it's so big that you can be from Texas and not know anything about other parts of Texas. You know, because I grew up in South Texas on the coast, and I've lived in Austin like my whole adult life. And so I know those areas of Texas very well, but I don't know like West Texas all that well. I've been there once or twice, you know.
Same. Yeah. Same. I grew up right there on that Texas Louisiana border. You know, I mean, I'm from the Spindletop town, which features very prominently in the Evans world. But I don't think I visited Austin or Dallas or San Antonio until I was an adult. You know, Texas is huge and it's very different from one side to the other. And on the border with Louisiana, you get another type of world to live in. So yeah, it's a big state. There's a lot going on and there's a lot of different characters to find for sure.
Well, I loved being in that niche with you, that Southeast Texas, because you know, it is very specific. And I really enjoyed that because I'm on the one hand, I got to go, oh, another Texan. But on the other hand, I'm like, but that's Southeast Texas. And
that's it was a different fun type of Texan.
Yeah, but yeah. It was fun, you know, to be able to go, that's so cool that I mean, I get to explore this part of my own state through this book. And it was a good time. And also, you know, again, your story was really engaging. And then I got to do that. So that was a double fun.
Fun.
Well, and I've also been learning a bit about slashers since my episode with Brian McCauley. It's not something I really ever tried before him. It was never really something I was drawn to. I'm always like, ooh, gothic. I want to swoon and have a haunted house. I just never really ventured there. You know, I have become interested in certain like work that they are doing and the way in which those kinds of stories are told. And I saw similar work happening in your book. And I won't give any of it away, but especially because I know that marketing gets tricky, but would you consider this a slasher or is it intended to be that way?
You know, it's funny that you asked that because I don't think so, but now I kind of do, you know, I've never really been a huge slasher fan personally myself. And then I spent all of last year writing an unannounced slasher standalone novel that's coming out in 2026. So I spent a lot of time like really diving into kind of the slasher tropes, the slasher world, what's going on, and kind of wrote, I don't want to say a traditional slasher because it's not, but followed more of what we would expect in a slasher. So in Bless Your Heart, like, I think no, because I don't feel like it hits those slasher notes, but we're seeing so many interesting things done in kind of the slasher world, like Josh Malerman's Daphne comes to mind, where, you know, Daphne's a very different type of slasher, or Stephen Graham Jones's, you know, Jay Daniels, everybody's favorite final girl, right? So to me, Bless Your Heart isn't a slasher, but I kind of love that maybe somebody would think it is, because I think that there's things we could talk about there meaningfully in the slasher world.
Well, the reason why I ask isn't just because it revels in gore, at least compared to what I'm used to. It revels in it, but that's not why I asked. What I've learned from Stephen Graham Jones and Brian McCauley, because I've read both, I forgot that I had read him, but I read like The Only Good Indians and things like that. So I didn't read the slasher books from Stephen Graham Jones, but what I learned from that and what I've learned from Brian is that, oh, we get in the heads of everyone, regardless of whether they live or die, regardless of whether they're good or bad. And I asked you because you get in the heads of everyone. So we see from everybody's point of view what's happening, including their demise if they die, you know. And so it's that's why I asked, not just because there's a lot of blood, which there is.
I, you know, there's, you know, a little bit of blood, a fair amount of blood. That's interesting. I love multi-POV work. I love multi-POV storytelling. And I love the ability to start at the beginning and end at the end, but kind of take this wiggly, crazy road to get there so that you are experiencing the story unfolding through everyone who's engaged actively in it. And as the reader or the audience, you're getting more information than any one character has at a time. So I love the jigsaw nature of that. And I didn't want to show these kills. I wanted to be in them with the person or people who were experiencing them. So I loved the idea of being able to, you know, switch and write from the perspective of the victim sometimes and let, you know, just be part of the story with them in the way that I wanted the reader to experience. I don't know. I liked head hopping. I think I just have like a tremendously terrible time controlling my own ADD sometimes. And I just want to know what's going on at all times. So being able to move around and tell the story from different perspectives and different motivations or different, you know, horrible experiences was really appealing to me. So, but I had not considered your thought process on it. So that's fun.
So for me, as someone who also, I walk in a couple of worlds and romance is the other world. That's actually something in line that I've always really enjoyed from some old school romantic suspense. So you have like Amanda Quick novels, because, you know, murders happen there too. And death happens in those too. gruesome ones. but yeah, we get in the heads of all these different characters in some of those older, like old school kind of romantic suspense, gothic suspense, or gothic, old school gothic romances. And it's so fun. And I was like, that's really cool because it gives us, I don't know, I just really enjoyed that because it gave me that feeling that I have when I read those other books. But at the same time, it also made me think of what I've been learning and discovering with slashers. I'm like, look at this thing that we do, this device that is out there to tell this story. I don't know. I just really enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, no, I'm glad. I think it's a lot of fun to, like I said, tell stories from different perspectives because we're all experiencing the same events, the same thing going on. And when you can kind of head hop like that and look through different folks' eyes at one time, you get more story than if you were just telling it, especially in a world like this where there's a mystery component and we're trying to riddle things out. Being able to see bits and pieces of this kind of compelling parts of a whole. To me, it's super exciting. So that's how the world works and Bless Your Heart. And it's fun. I don't get to do that all the time with all my projects. So it's nice to, you know, wallow in the fun of it for a little bit.
Oh, it was so fun. Well, I love Caitlin Doherty on YouTube. I love her books and I love her YouTube channel, Ask a Mortician. So, you know, I know a lot of what I know from her regarding the funeral industry. but what research did you do for writing the funeral parlor stuff? Because even if what you're doing is in the supernatural world, it's still grounded in real things. They still have the trocars and stuff like that. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I have a trocar sitting behind me on my bookshelf.
I see that.
Well, I'm a professor, like by trade. So research is just part of who I am. And I have this interesting tick where I can't write fiction about things if I don't know the nonfiction of them, right? The truth. I have to know how things work, how they, you know, understand them, know the history, and which is part of the reason I went with Strigoi, you know, the vampire that preceded the vampire that preceded the vampire, you know, the Strigoi. So that was a ton of research. And the funeral home was the same. I want to know the process. I want to know what it's like to work in a funeral home. And yes, I have read every single book that Caitlin Doherty has written, and I've seen every single video on her YouTube channel. She does not know that she is my best friend and I live on her
same.
YouTube. But, you know, back when I really truly wanted to be a mortician when I was younger. I mean, I was doing volunteer type stuff or trying to get apprenticeships at funeral parlors when I was 18, 19 years old. And so I've just always been fascinated by the idea of taking care of people when they can no longer take care of themselves, which is what the funeral business should do. I'll just throw the caveat of should in there. But so to do this writing, I spent a lot of time researching and watching videos and visiting places and going to funeral parlors and talking to people because I wanted to understand like the part that you don't see when you typically go visit a funeral parlor, right? We're there for very different purposes usually than the business of it. So I wanted to know the business of it so I could have women who did the business of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. I've become very interested. Like I've written articles on like death doulas and things like that. And I love the approach that this matriarchy had because it meshed, and it's a very Caitlin Doherty approach, honestly. It's very mindful of the rights and the life of the people that have died and not just like a business, you know, there it's more than that.
Absolutely. And yes, I'm currently in the process of trying to start my death doula program. One of my closest friends, Stephanie Wojtowicz, did hers last year. And I'm like, I want to do that too, but time has been squeezed lately. But the Evans women have very different perspectives on their own business. You know, Lenore Evans, very similar to my Nana Lenore, is kind of like, this is dignity, this is proper, this is this. And not all the same Evans women, or not all the Evans women share that same perspective. And so I kind of wanted to bring that in a little bit too, but always being mindful and respectful of the actual process. And women have been caretakers of the dead,
yes,
you know, forever. And it's only kind of in the more modern funeral business that that we're not. And I talk about that a little bit too. You know, in the very first chapter of the book, Snow Leger says it's kind of, you know, kind of gross, right? And the Evans are like, no, it's actually, you know, very feminine, very caring, very, you know, nurturing. And I wanted to show that as well. So I guess there's that bigger story we were talking about, right? Like talking about what a matriarchy looks like, what women's roles look like in their own families and their communities and in their jobs.
Yeah, midwives used to do both work. They used to bring babies in the world and they used to usher people out of this world. And, you know, you see that in Dickens and everything too. Mm-hmm. But fun Texas fact, the woman at the center or who started the reemergence of this idea of the death doula is an Austin woman. So it's based here. And, you know, I mean, of course, they're all over now, but the woman who kind of reemerged or had that whole phenomenon reemerge is here in Austin. I'm like, of course.
Of course it is. It's Texan women.
That's right. Is it me or did I see a few practical magic Easter eggs in your book?
It's not just you. I have this, what I would call like my stable of favorite movies, and I kind of watch them on a loop all the time. And it's Practical Magic is one, Stepford Wives, Death Becomes Her. You know, I just have these, I just watch over and over and over again. But, you know, because the Evans and women were very inspired by my actual family, my mother is actually a huge Alice Hoffman fan.
Oh,
so
nice.
My mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, and I did midnight margaritas when I was, you know, a teenager at home. And so like some of those things, they have a little bit of that practical magic to them, but I don't even notice them anymore because they're so much part of my life now.
Yeah.
So it's like a yes and no and absolutely yes answer to that question. It's like, no, yeah, they're in there. No, it wasn't really inspiration, but yes, it 100% totally is. So it's really funny how those things we connect with, whether they're a film or a movie, you know, those things that call to us become part of us in such a way where we don't, you know, it kind of all blends together into who we are. And I've gotten that comment a couple times and I love it. I'm like, yes, because I have very real memories of dancing around the kitchen with my grandmother's having virgin midnight margaritas.
Yeah.
I should be clear, when I was like 13 years old, but yeah, so they're definitely there because that's definitely part of the world. It's part of mine.
Well, not only I saw the midnight margaritas and someone buried beneath a rose bush, but also just the matriarchy and the way it's structured as far as like there's like they have a history of husbands and partners dying and these sorts of things. And I was like, she's winking at us. And I just really appreciated that.
I'm so glad. Yeah. You know, my grandfather was a gardener extraordinaire specializing in roses. So like, again, like there's so much real life there and it just happens to blend. And I kind of, I love that little bit of overlap. So, because I, you know, I'm a big fan of the implied context, right? Like I think of rose bushes and I think of family stuff, or I think of how many times I have dealt with rose bushes and not growing or growing too much. And, but there's also, like you said, the practical magic part or other things that kind of loop together. And so you get this rich feeling, as a reader, as an audience, to come away with, because you get so much context and so much memory and nostalgia that build into some of those special moments that make things even more, you know, meaningful to the individual.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I have to say, Lindy, I mean, it is something I think I will reread again and again. It was such a good time. It was something so special. I can't tell you how glad I am that Rachel mentioned this on my show for the looking forward to, you know, to in 2024, because this really, I will reflect on this at the end of the year as one of my favorite reads. It really is a treat.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Rachel. I'm
Absolutely.
such a huge Rachel Harrison fan, and I will never stop talking about how amazing Rachel's books are. And I love that she writes about female friendships and in those experiences as well. And of course, that she read and blurbed Bless Your Heart means a lot, because I'm a huge Rachel fan. So I'll share that love right back.
Well, congratulations and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today on She Wore Black. If you like what you heard and want to support my work on the show, you can visit my website at sheworeblackpodcast.com for links to my Patreon, my coffee donation site, as well as my merch and my online bookshop. You can also help out the show by rating me on Apple and following me on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads, and letting your friends know about the show. Thanks for joining me today, and happy reading.